It was a lot of like secretly people just telling me Bible stories from memory, and I watched a lot of Prince of Egypt.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Tola Mbakwe. The Profile is the show where we sit down with a well-known Christian to hear more about their life, faith, and ministry. It's brought to you by the UK's leading Christian magazine, Premier Christianity. The monthly title features more interviews just like this one, the latest news, reviews, columnists, and more. Discover more and check out our best subscription offers now at premierchristianity.com. Today on the show, I'm speaking to Grace Jin Drexel. She's the daughter of Pastor Ezra Jin, the founder of Zion Church, one of China's largest unregistered churches. Last October, Grace's father was detained by Chinese authorities as part of what campaigners describe as an intensifying crackdown on Christianity in China. He remains imprisoned, and Grace is now dedicating her life to raising awareness and calling for justice, not just for her father, but for many Christians facing persecution because of their faith. During a recent visit to London, where she spoke in Parliament about religious freedom, Grace stopped by the Premier Christian Media Centre to share her story. She opens up about what it was like growing up as a Christian in China, the risks her family faced, and the hope that continues to sustain them despite pressure and persecution. In this full interview, Grace reflects on moving from China to the United States, how her father's faith guided him through decades of state scrutiny, and why she still believes God is at work in China today. Stay with us. You're about to hear a deeply personal story of courage, faith, and resilience that few have ever heard firsthand. Grace, so your father has been thrust into the spotlight after his arrest in October. But I just want to go all the way back to your childhood. What was it like growing up?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to tell my story. So when I was growing up, and probably even a bit now as well, but especially when I was growing up, there weren't that many Christians in China, and people didn't really even know what it meant to be a Christian. So I remember specifically when I went to elementary school, when I would tell people what my dad's job was, they would just not understand what a pastor was at all. So later on, I realized that I would just start telling people that my dad was a teacher. And if they asked me, what did he teach? And I would say religion. And then you would get like the, oh, great, awesome. And then dot, dot, dot. And then they would sort of like talk about something else immediately, because it was still not really a respectful job or something that was, like that you would talk about much with people. And specifically, I remember when I was going to school, my teacher, who was a little bit of a, my teacher in my first grade was a little bit of an older lady who was very much shaped by the Cultural Revolution. And she saw my family as very much like the remnant of like the like old thoughts and like the superstition that had to be like taken away for the new society and such. So she picked on me and did not allow me to, like in China, most kids join like the Young Pioneers Program. And that was like the first step of joining the Communist Party in some ways. But pretty much everyone joined the Young Pioneers Program, and you would have this like red handkerchief around your neck. And the teacher would specifically point me out and say that I was not allowed to join because my family was like bad, basically. And of the whole school, when everyone would be saluting to the flag, there's like a special salute that you would do as a young pioneer. I would be the only child in the whole school that would just be standing there looking directly at the sun and not like in uniform with everyone else.
So from a very early age, you knew that you were different because you came from a Christian family.
Yes, yes. So that was probably the first introduction to knowing kind of how my family was seen by society and how it was a different environment from the rest of the community outside of just my family. But to be honest, like, I also felt like as I was talking to my friends, I realized I had this community of church and people who loved me outside of just my family, which a lot of the folks also did not have. Like, they had their immediate families, their mom and their dad, and that was pretty much it. Versus for me, like, every Sunday I would have many tens of aunts and uncles that would always dote on me, give me like food and ask me about school and such. So it was definitely a blessing and a curse. And from a very young age, I knew that I was different, but it wasn't all like negative, I would say.
And then you all moved to the States?
Yes. So my father was, in fact, initially, he came to faith in a state church, and so he started ministering at a state church. But very quickly, he realized that it was not a place in which he can really, truly glorify God solely, and he was constantly in a pull to make decisions of how to balance like what the state and the Communist Party wanted versus what he felt was like led by the Spirit, etc., and the church. So ultimately, after 10 years of serving in the state government church, he could not take it any longer and found a reason to leave, in which he went abroad to the U.S. To Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, and went to school and took the whole family to California for a couple of years. Mm. Yeah.
I want to talk a bit about the state churches. What's your opinion on them? Is it still worth someone in China going to a state church, or do you feel like they're not able to practice true Christianity in them?
Yeah, I will say, even despite everything, all the control, like, God works in mysterious and wondrous ways, and God works in churches like the state church as well. But I don't think it is a church. I think it is a church that is in captivity. I think it is a church that is not glorifying to the Lord, especially as in my father's position as a leader of the church. I think he, again, just felt like he could not honestly sit down and say that he was serving one master fully. He was, again, constantly needing to, like, his whole paycheck was controlled by the government. His whole, he was ordained by the church, but many of the other leaders, like, you had to know that, like, who was giving you that authority. And it wasn't God, it wasn't the church, it was the Chinese Communist Party. So you owed a lot to, and if you were ever on their bad side, then they can any time take that away. And so that's also why you see like kind of weird things that's happening, like singing red party songs and having like portraits of Xi Jinping in the church. And like from afar, you just think it's like a bizarre little quirk in China. But if you ultimately know why they're doing it, it's because they are controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And if they don't do that, they know that everything that they have can be easily taken away. And it's maybe not necessarily written down anywhere per se, but you would know exactly how to behave. Otherwise, you can see other people being punished around you. And it's not just a control of the leadership, but like how many people get baptized, what kind of small groups you can lead, whether or not you can do retreats. Like, I remember my dad would do these secret retreats in the middle of in the middle of the mountains, but those would always get him in trouble and such. Especially also like to minister to young children. Like in China, you can't have kids going into churches under the age of 18. It's like church is like a bar. Like you can't, it would be, it's just as evil, supposedly. Like for me, I remember just like there were no like VBS programs or whatever, like children, like ministering to kids. It was a lot of like secretly people just telling me Bible stories from memory. And I watched a lot of Prince of Egypt and hoping that like I would just take in the Bible stories through these various ways.
So when you moved to the States, your dad was in seminary. Was there a sense of freedom that you felt?
Oh, yeah, totally. And in fact, it was not just freedom, but like, again, it was just this shock that people, first of all, knew what a pastor was. And secondly, like, they respected that job, and it was not seen as like something to look down upon or something to be kept hidden. So it was quite shocking to me, like, especially in when I first came to school, and then the teachers were like, "Oh, your dad's a pastor. That's awesome." And I was like, "Oh, what?" So that was all extremely shocking. And and especially going to a church, and they had like the whole programs that were geared towards children. There were like retreats that just like kids went on. Oftentimes, like there were like scholarships for anyone who wanted to come, etc. And I mean, in the U.S., like it was like a huge industry to like minister to children. And again, these were just not something that I've experienced in China, nor like things that people like thought about or like worked on. And so it was a very different environment. And like, obviously, it's not just about religion. There was just a lot of things in the U.S. that was very different. Like, libraries were, like, free. You can borrow 50 books. Like, that's just unheard of in China. And so it was just a very different, like, complete environment growing up, yeah.
And tell me about the moment where your father told your family, okay, we're going back to China now.
Yes. So in a way, like, we moved to the U.S. kind of very last minute. And from my father and my mom's perspective, like, later on, they pretty much told me that they didn't necessarily get it approved by the party. And so they told them very last minute, booked a ticket and left very quickly. Otherwise, like, they may not have even been able to leave, etc. And similarly, it felt a little bit like that going back. So later, like, from my parents' perspective, they, I think there was a period where they considered staying in the U.S. It was easier for the family. I was obviously, more familiar with the American education system and doing better in the American education system, etc. And there was a church that had offered my dad an opportunity to be a pastor there. And the U.S. at that time was also very, like, easier to immigrate to, etc. But I think towards the end of his studies, apparently some church members in China reached out to my dad and said, we haven't found a good church since you've left, and we've been suffering. Like, we need you to come back and please minister to us again. And I think he really did feel the pains of those that he left behind. And as a preacher, I think he felt like he felt the sadness of like a flock without a shepherd. And so with that, I don't think he necessarily thought too deeply either. He just knew that he was being called back. And so he asked us, like, what would you think? And I think I was also very naive. I was like, great, let's go. Like, I don't
know. How old were you at that point?
I was going into middle school. Okay. And it was like, we're all naive and we wanted like something new and different. And then I think at the time, like, middle school, like, boys and girls were like being bullies, and I was like, like, China might be like, and that was where my family was. I missed my, like, my grandma, my cousins, etc. Just also still did feel more like home, I would say. So, like, very naively, we were like, yes, let's all just go back. Yeah.
And so you went back, and is that when he founded Zion Church?
Yes. So in 2007, around then, that was when my father moved back and started Zion Church in 2007 officially.
And when did you become aware that this church, it being unregistered, was actually a pretty big deal?
I think, again, I think we were, I was still very, like naive and didn't really know a lot about church-state relations. First of all, when we went back, for my father, he knew that he couldn't like hide and do an underground church, quote unquote, like in the kitchen, and no one would know about it, etc. Like, because he was ordained by the state, I think they always knew where he was, so they would definitely come and ask him, like, so what are you doing now, etc. So he knew from the beginning that it wasn't something that was even available to him, even if he wanted to. At the same time, I think there was a movement around the 2000s where churches were opening up and becoming like the rest of civil society, wanting to be more present in the world and wanting to, like in the theology as well, in the Chinese church theology, they wanted to become the light and the salt of the society and not just kept hidden. It was a movement of this emerging urban church movement that had churches open up and rent like offices or rent more public spaces, etc. And my dad was probably not one of the like first pioneers, but definitely joined the movement and was one of the largest churches in Beijing since. I think, like, again, kind of coming from a state church, I knew that we weren't going to the big, beautiful buildings anymore. So there was definitely something that was different. But honestly, there were a lot of people that I knew since I was a child, a lot of people that my dad was ministering to since I was a young girl, attended Zion Church. So it was continuous in that sense. I think there was a general opening up again, so it didn't feel like it was like wrong per se. Even at school, in fact, like people were more like open to religion, and just like I was the girl who came back from America, so it was just like seen as kind of a Western cool thing, I suppose. So it was a very different environment from which I left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what kind of persecution did the church start seeing? So how big? Because I mean, it's a very big church with many different branches, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So starting this all, I think there was a persecution this year, in last year, 2025, in October. But even before that, around 2016 onwards, that was when the first wave of persecution really began. So in 2016, there was a rewriting of the regulation of religion in China, and that was officially enforced starting in 2018. And beginning of 2016, 2017, 2018 was when we saw like churches being leveled, crosses being taken down, and a lot of like church persecution. But again, not just on like Christians, there were Catholics, Uyghurs, Muslims, Buddhist, and all of these religious organizations all had to kind of change what they were doing initially and become more like quote unquote sinicized or quote more Chinese. Yeah. And such. And so that was like the first wave of this this persecution. My father's church at that time was hosting around 5 services every week. We had 3 Chinese service, a Korean service, because my family's actually ethnically Korean, and an English service, actually, because when I went back to China, I really liked the American like worship songs, etc. So I kind of wanted like English service. So it very much grew out of that, I suppose. So in 2018, when they shut down my father's church, it was around 1,500 members that would attend our church weekly. In September 9th of 2018, the government came with around like 100 supposedly policemen and shut down the entire church, confiscated everything that was in the building, threw everyone out, and held my father in the in custody inside the church while they kicked everyone else out for several hours, and then ultimately he was released. And then everyone was heavily surveilled and harassed afterwards. And at that time in 2018, the main starting point of why they came to Zion Church was because they wanted to install facial recognition cameras inside the church. They had discussed it with church leadership, and they said, well, we are a very open church. We like simulcast, or we have recordings, and you can come anytime. You basically know what we're going to say anyway. Mm-hmm. So welcome to join our church on Sundays. But we didn't feel like they want to install 23 facial recognition cameras inside the sanctuary. So we said, well, like, we didn't feel like we wanted to protect our own congregation and such. And so the church leadership told them, like, let's not do that. Let's think of other things that we can do instead, etc. But they did not want to have that conversation. And so ultimately they shut down our church for supposedly that reason.
So we hear a lot about, especially at Premier, about Christian persecution and, you know, like you say, churches being shut down, people getting arrested. But it's hard to really empathize until you hear it directly. What was the life like during that time?
Yeah. I totally agree. When I was telling people about my story, there was someone that told me something that I remember. Is just, they said that since they've known that there are Christians in China, they've always been persecuted. Like, what's new? And then I also can understand, like, it is true, like, the Chinese history is just a really hard country to minister to. And I often ask myself, too, like, for how long, God, will you, like, keep this, like, country's heart hardened against you? And for how many, like, martyrs and how many leaders must, like, be in this country and give up their families, give up their lives, give up their, like, everything in order for you to open up this country. And so there were, like, missionaries in the past, many from your nation as well, and many from the U.S. and all the other countries as well. And then in generations of Chinese Christians who have, like, suffered under the Cultural Revolution and after and such. So I also don't know, but, like, again, it also showcases just repeated and over again generations of, like, leaders and generations of Christians who love this land because God did not give up on China. And so similarly, I also feel like from my father's story and from those of many people in China, it shows that, like, God did not give up on China and is consistently wants to have a relationship, is knocking on the door and wants to like open the hearts of the Chinese people. Yeah.
So despite all the oppression and the persecution, you still have hope that God is going to do, or is continuing to do, great things in China.
Yeah. In fact, my father was detained on October 10th, but starting on October 9th was the arrest of the first pastor of Zion Church, Pastor Wang Lin, and he was detained in Shenzhen. And so for the 24 hours after, the church leadership were all wondering, like, what was happening? Is this the big takedown, or is this, like, kind of still a one-off detention in which we can kind of sit down and have conversation with the government, etc.? But at the time, the now interim head pastor of Zion Church, who was based in the U.S., who is still based in the U.S., and he was a student in the U.S. while this was all happening, he had asked my father, like, what if this was the big takedown? How would you feel? And he had expected my father to, like, I don't know, be a little bit afraid or just something. But instead, he said, my father's first thing was that he said was hallelujah. Then the gospel will spread even further. And so I think it's similarly like in Zion's own history as well. You see that when the persecution happened, God works in mysterious ways and open up even wider the plans that he had for this nation and for my father's church and for the nation, like beyond what we could have imagined. And I think in this detention as well, like it, I think my father hopes and prays that that this would also open up more opportunities to minister to people who may not have had any actual relationship with Christians.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
Yeah, it's great. So did you ever see this coming? In the back of your mind, did you think one day, you know, you and your family, you're in the US at this point, and your dad was the only one left in China. Did you think one day this is just going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Especially I worked kind of in the human rights space as well in the past. And especially seeing like Pastor Wang Yi being detained. And he was a pastor in a church called Early Rain Covenant Church, which was one of the big churches in Sichuan in and so when he was detained in 2018, his church was also shut down a couple of months after my father's church was shut down. But he actually, along with several of the church leaders, were arrested and formally charged, and he was ultimately charged with 9 years in prison. And that was shocking to all of us, to be honest. Like it didn't feel like it was possible that now people were getting imprisoned for it. And even prior to that, there was Pastor Jin Tianming of Shouwang Church in Beijing. That was also one of the big churches that was in the first like opening up movement. And he was house arrested for 10 years or so. And so like, I think it was always possible, and I think I always thought that it was possible, but it was also a little bit of like a romanticized feeling of like, you know, once in a while I would think like, oh, if I were detained, what kind of songs would I sing in prison? it was still a little bit in the realms of like, how can I keep faithful while I'm like detained? But it didn't feel like real, like it was going to happen to my family and it was going to happen to my dad. And so even when it happened, like on October 10th, when my mom called me and said that like I couldn't get in contact with they couldn't get in contact with my dad or anyone around him, I was still in this like in this feeling of like, oh, maybe like everyone's just busy with the detention of the other pastor and like things will be okay. And it didn't feel like it could like truly happen and for my family. And now I do feel this like tremendous like pressure of like, what do I do now and how can I get my father out? And it does feel this sense of like helplessness in some ways too. Like I'm doing everything that I can possibly think of, and yet like again and again you see not just pastors but like human rights advocates, etc., just like I haven't seen anyone being released in China. So what do I do? And yeah,
and what is he being officially held for? What is the actual charge?
So they officially charged him with a kind of a weird charge of like illegally use of information online. And they point to the fact that he held his services online. But it's it's quite bizarre because, I mean, our services are still, like, recorded and are online on YouTube still, and you can watch all of them, and there's nothing that is, like, controversial or criminal about it. But the fact that they view this this service as something that is so criminalized is pretty bizarre. And I think they're also trying to look for ways to add other charges as well, including in recent cases, you see a lot of fraud charges being leveled on these church leaders. And the idea of a fraud charge in their perspective is that you go around claiming that you're a pastor and asking for tithe and such, but we don't see you as a pastor, so therefore you're a fraudster and you are defrauding people. But again, historically, church has never required the government to accept that you are a pastor in order to, like, do the very basic church things. And so it's ultimately still just blatant religious freedom persecution, just under some guise of legal, like, coding.
Is there an actual process? Like, are they saying, okay, he's going to have a hearing at this time, and like, or is he allowed to have lawyers?
Yeah. So right now he is being detained, and they are, I think it's the level of like fact finding from the police, like level, which is also in some ways good. Hopefully, it's several steps away from even a court charge. And in China, once you get to the court, like, you're pretty much 99% going to be guilty. So there's a lot that could happen, and there is some sort of a formal process. And we've been in some ways fortunate that they seem to be going through at least a motion of making it look like it is like they're going through the process as it is written. They are allowing our church leaders to have lawyers of their own, which is, again, like a huge, like, blessing already as it is. But we know that it's a long road ahead, and even the lawyers, they feel a lot of pressure and such to take on such case like this. So, yeah.
But the lawyers are doing their part, and you're also doing your part. You've been raising a lot of awareness about this. You work in the U.S. Senate. Tell me about how you've used kind of your job and your role to bring awareness to this.
Yeah. Thank you. I actually recently quit my job, partly because it was really impossible to do, to do both a normal job and to advocate for my father. And I think for me, like, I am an American citizen since through marriage, and I have my own career that I've, like, found that I liked, and that my dad actually, in fact, didn't even know anything about, because I was a little bit worried that, like, if it could get tied to him, etc. So I told him that I was just a researcher, and then it's like, I'm just a teacher. He was just a teacher, and I'm just a researcher. and so he didn't know who I was working for, what I was doing, or anything like that. And I think from my perspective, I really just didn't know what else to do. Like, I knew that not speaking out and just not doing anything would not get a lighter sentence. Like, we just saw in May of this year, there was a sentencing of another regional church called Golden Lampstand Church in Linfen. Their church leaders were charged with 15 years and 9 years, and subsequently many people from anywhere for 2 years to 4 years, etc. And they were very quiet about it, and not necessarily, I don't know if they meant to, or they just didn't have as much opportunities or whatnot. But the fact is that they didn't speak out, and yet they were still charged and prosecuted for such heavy sentencing. And so for my dad, our church was probably going to be charged more severely. The fact that they simultaneously arrested close to 30 leaders across 11 cities. Like, that type of arrest was not something that you like do if you just wanted to like let them down easy per se. So I don't know. I'm still learning and I don't know what I'm doing, to be honest. I just want to get my dad out and I just want my father along with all the 17 other leaders to be released. And they can go on preaching, praying, and just leading the church as they normally do. In the case of my father, he in fact had basically told me and the government the past two that he was willing to retire because he hasn't seen his family in the last 7 years after the government shutdowns out in 2018. He has been under a travel ban in China, so he hasn't been able to be with his family for the last 7 years. He wasn't able to be at my wedding. He wasn't able to be at my brother's graduations. Like, there were many things that he already missed in our lives, and he also feels like he wants to be a father and a grandfather. And so I think that if given the opportunity, we would love for him to join our families in the U.S.
And have you heard from him since October?
Only through lawyers. And so the lawyers would read what we sent to him in a very deep voice and not in my voice at all. but he would tell us how my father is doing, etc. But I mean, it's one thing to like hear from someone else, and it's definitely another to like hear in person, or like even if it's letters directly. Like, we are not even allowed to send in letters and to have him send letters back, etc. We're very concerned.
What do you think it will take? We know as Christians we're praying, but when you think of China, it's a very big, powerful country. It's
yeah.
not a country that kind of just does what it wants, doesn't care what the rest of the world thinks. What do you think it will take, whether it's the US government, the UK government? What will it take? What would you like to see the world leaders do in the case of religious persecution in China?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really, really difficult question in some ways as well. And in some ways, I also understand that, like, the governments are not gods either, and like they also have their own calculations and their own like agendas, etc. And I mean, like, I think it is extremely heartbreaking in some ways to realize that what a lot of leaders claim to be something that they like value, like universal human rights or religious freedom, and then you see what they actually do, it's very different. And I think in some ways, like, China also sees that, and when the Western world claims that freedom is something that they stand for, and then they're so weak on actually following up, I think China points to that to its own people to say, look, either the West is weak or they are actually just like us, and you aren't like you're not better than us, etc. But I don't think that is true. I think it is, like, if you're trying to compete in terms of just like security and economics, like, I don't think it's possible to compete with autocrats that don't care about human rights. They have people working 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours for 7 days a week, and there's no way for them to even, like, the Chinese people doesn't want that either, but there's no way for them to even, like, fight or stand up for themselves, etc. But I think, like, if we really do believe in these things and we want to stand up for our values, I think that's where the strength of both, like our system and our values really shine. And I also think ultimately, like, I believe that God blesses those who stand with the persecuted and bless those that are fighting the fight for what we believe in, etc. Mm. So, yeah, I really do hope and pray that it might not seem in the short term to be the smart thing, the cunning thing to do, per se. But it is the right thing, and I hope that the nations will continue to do the right thing, because that's what made this nation great in the first place. Yeah.
Right now, the U.S. has President Trump in office, who actually has been vocal about religious freedom. In his first term, he was able to get Andrew Brunson, a pastor from Turkey, mm-hmm. released. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible, with how bold he is as a president, that he could raise awareness of your father and the others?
Yeah, I certainly think that that it is possible, and I really hope and pray that his administration, his team, and President Trump would be able to raise my father's case, along with many other Christians and other persecuted individuals, especially on this trip in April, where he would be going into Beijing. It would just be incredible if he came down from Air Force One with just an amazing miracle. And I think, like, the legacy of someone who is able to free people and free the prisoners would just be an incredibly powerful legacy to be for this president as well. I hope that that is something that he will raise.
What do you think the UK church, Christians here in the UK, what can we do to raise awareness or to help the case of people like your father, Ezra? I don't think we've said his name this whole time.
Oh, yes. Yes, Pastor Ezra Jin. It's because I don't call him that.
Exactly.
I call him Appa.
What can we do? What can Christians in the UK, what can the government in the UK be doing to really be an advocate for people like Ezra, Pastor Ezra Jin, in China?
Yeah. I think first and foremost, I think the power of prayer is so, so integral and important. Like, again, I think that ultimately, like, I believe and we believe in the God who is the ultimate liberator, and he opened the prison doors for Peter. He opened the prison doors for Paul and Silas, etc. And I think that he has the ability to do greater things than any of the empires think that they have power to do. So I think prayer and, like, having like the whole church pray, etc., would just be an incredible movement in the UK. I think helping just the society or the government, the generation to again stand up for values, stand up for human rights, stand up for religious freedom, stand up for, like, Christians. Those would be just, like, I hope for, like, a revival in that sense as well, to take up the mantle and say, we are not separate entities. We are one body in Christ, and when one suffers, we all suffer alongside. And when there is injustice in one place in the world, it is not just something that we can close our eyes and ignore, but it hurts, it impacts, we weep with until it is made right.
Despite everything that Christians in China are going through, they're growing. Christians are growing in China by the millions. What can us as Western Christians learn from Christians in China?
Yeah. I mean, it is surprising. I think it is very much the opposite of, and I think that's also why I think the Chinese government also should have an incentive to stop persecuting Christians, because it's not helpful in supposedly cracking down and suppressing Christians. Because ultimately, when you see faith lived out so so boldly, and you say, like for example, Pastor Wang Yi made a statement after he was detained and says, "Take me, I'm here. I'm willing to lay down my life. What is prison?" And that strength, that power is something so lacking in the Chinese society and potentially the rest of the world as well. It's so refreshing to see people to say, this is not in my incentive to do. I've given up wealth, riches, like prestige and all such. And all I want is to lay down my life because Christ has already laid down his life for me. And that's so countercultural that oftentimes it's extremely attractive to people looking and seeking for something that they realize that wealth and like influence does not bring meaning and happiness. And so I think that's what we see in China, and that's why Christianity is growing in China. And again, I think for the rest of the world, maybe to live more boldly and to do things a little bit that's courageous and a little bit outside of the comfort zone, maybe not in your interest to do, and see how that affects your life too.
Right. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add, Grace?
I think this is, I'm still very much learning through kind of this situation with our families and everything. And again, I just want to ask for a lot of prayer and ask for a lot of support, especially for those in China, and especially the family members in China who are not even able to speak out on the, for their families. There are so many churches and so many church leaders, not just Zion Church, but many others who are also imprisoned and persecuted. Like just last month, the Early Rain Covenant Church also again got another crackdown. And the month before that, a church in Wenzhou, the Yayang Church in Wenzhou, was also persecuted. And the government even released fireworks to celebrate the fact that they like cracked down on this church, etc. And so many stories are not told because they're either not in safety or they're it's just not available to them. And so it is not a unique story, but it is something that is happening to many people in China. And many children watched their parents being dragged out in the middle of the night, treated as criminals, handcuffed in front of them. And I hope and pray for the generation of children as well, for God to like comfort them, comfort the family members, and to know that God is with them and the church, the global church, is with them.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.